We'll get serious about reading today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Nancy Hayes is retired from teaching English at St. Ambrose, but Garrison Keillor is still at the Writer's Almanac. Both are with us today on Scribble.
Nancy, I've met you a couple of times only, but ever since I first met you, I've been dying to get you on this program and ask you about the canon and your feelings about that. Let me briefly begin by suggesting that the canon is that body of literature that when I was going to school, high school and college, every educated English major was expected to know. It turned out, unfortunately, as the feminists quickly pointed out in the 60s, that these were the dead white guys, Keats, Shelley, Shakespeare, Byron, Emerson, Thoreau, Whitman, et cetera, et cetera. And so there began a revolution against the idea that there was a canon. When I started teaching at Augie in 1960, I could count on every single one of my high school students coming to me in freshman English, having read Silas Marner, having read The Yearling, having read Macbeth, having read A Tale of Two Cities, and so forth. By the time I retired, and certainly it has gotten worse since, I couldn't count on any two students having read the same thing at all. And the question I want to, you know, I don't mind the disappearance of the dead white guys, and I don't mind squeezing in some women writers and some African-American writers. But the question that bothers me, and I'm not on one side or the other of this, can we have a culture in which there is no real single culture?
Well, I don't believe we can have a culture in the same sense, maybe that certainly that we used to count on. I think it has become much more of a mixed fabric. But that means that it changes all the time, and you can't ever really have a real sense that this is our culture. And I'm not sure that that's a bad thing, but I definitely, when it comes to the canon and literature, I think it's partly a semantic difficulty. When you talk about the canon, it immediately associates with elitism and the whole dead white guy.
Well, it was. And in fact, the canon, it turns out, is a bogus construct. In about the 1890s, Harvard University, in order to attract students, put out to all the high schools that if you expect to get into Harvard College, these are the books, the great books you must know. And here, there come the dead white guys. And high schools started saying, well, ooh, we better start teaching these guys. And then colleges started teaching, well, if Harvard requires those students, we better start teaching them too. And pretty soon, you know, everybody's learning the same set of people all over the country.
On the other hand, Shakespeare has to be in no matter what color he is and whether he's alive or dead, because you can't do, there's certain things you can't do without. And if you ignore
Shakespeare...
Well,
let Nancy answer that. Well, she teaches it.
I'm worried about this. I'm worried that my dear St. Ambrose might indeed think we don't need, at least for a while, to have someone who can teach Shakespeare in the department. It's a very real worry that I have.
Is it still a requirement for
now,
an English major?
This is really interesting because the article that I was mentioning to Raul before we started, it touches on the numbers of colleges, including the, and I have the figures right here, only four of the nation's 52 top highest ranked universities and colleges have a Shakespeare requirement, and that's for the any major. And only 8% of the top universities require for English majors Shakespeare. And this brings me to St. Ambrose. When I first arrived at St. Ambrose, this is 18 years ago, they did have a Shakespeare requirement for the English majors, which I went, duh. And shortly after I was there, and that was what I was hired to teach, two years or so, that came into question. Should we require Shakespeare? Should the theater department require Shakespeare? And I was overruled, and I was new. I was a little sad about that to start with. But as time went by, I figured, well, I'm just going to make this the best class it can possibly be, attract people, the students will talk among themselves, and they'll want to take it because they have this ideal of what a firm liberal arts grounding is. And actually, it turned out very well. I have to say, it needs to be offered. And recently, when I spoke to the folks who were coming after me, taking over from me, they said, well, Nancy, I think everybody was taking Shakespeare, or many were taking Shakespeare, because they liked you. And I was mystified by that. And so I really do have a mission to somehow, like I did last year with our annual theme at St. Ambrose, somehow just get the word out that Shakespeare is wonderful and fun, and you don't have to be required to take it. You know, there are lots of reasons why you would want to take it. So,
I cannot imagine being an English major without Shakespeare. I can imagine it without Melville and
Keats and
Whitman,
Shelley.
Maybe.
Yeah, you can
Keats.
Let those go.
But Shakespeare, I think, is still a requirement at Augie, but no longer Chaucer, no longer Milton, you know, no longer Old English. I can remember in the mid-1960s when Knox College, you know, sort of the college we really looked up to as Old Siwash, suddenly decided that an English major was any 10 courses.
Was what?
And any 10 courses in English.
Any 10 courses.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, you make up your own major. And that results that our graduates, but we've moved in that direction too, right? We still require Shakespeare, but that probably, you know, when Karin Youngberg, the great Shakespeare teacher at Augie, is gone, that probably is going to go by the wayside too.
You know, I cannot understand how anyone on the subject of English can possibly think that you can avoid Shakespeare, that you can put him aside. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at the man's vocabulary, if nothing else. He invented so many words. We speak Shakespeare all the time. We use his phrases over and over again in ordinary conversation without knowing it. Dead as a doornail, all those things. How could you overlook Shakespeare? Our language seems to have been built on the King James Bible and Shakespeare, with Shakespeare having a much greater impact.
And an impact on human, I think, that our various ways of understanding human nature and psychology. Think of Freud's great discovery by reading, well, some of the Greeks as well, of course, but by reading Hamlet, and how we can understand what we're all about as people. And it seems to me, of all the literature, and I also love Chaucer and Milton, and I teach them, but I agree that Shakespeare is central to the importance of literature in building, I think, a culture, speaking of culture, where there is justice and there is a empathy and all of those things that it seems like some of those who are against any sort of requirement in literature departments that they would also want. And I've got this quote. I don't want to monopolize this conversation on this point, but
yeah, it's what you're here to do.
Yeah,
okay. But there was in this article by Suzanne Fields in the Washington Times, which is responding in this the more timely subject, was the Julius Caesar put on the Shakespeare in the Park and had a Donald Trump lookalike in the role of Caesar. And, of course, you know, lots and lots of discussion about this. There's also been, in the not-too-distant past, a Obama lookalike in that role, and so on. So the idea is that, of course, you're responding politically. You're taking kind of what you do at the Genesius Guild with the Greek plays in bringing in topical interest. But this article that the author is making the point that then you miss the words. You're focused so much on the politics, and you miss the value of the words. And there's some great quotes in this article, and one of them I read several times. I thought I would love to bring this to our discussion, is that the spectacle changes with fresh costumes and new sets to emphasize contemporary issues for specific audiences. But the words, and I repeat, the words, that's also a Hamlet quote, continue to plumb psychological depth and measure human insight no matter where and when it's played or who plays it. So there's a sort of lasting quality about the words. And then the problem with the canon is I think that we're trying to be so inclusive that we're thinking more of politics and social, I guess, issues than we are art and literature. And I know that can sound really stuffy to care about the aesthetics, but it goes deeper than that, because the aesthetics include rhetoric, which moves you and causes you to think and draws you in to, you know, 400 years ago situations that then you can see a resonance today. And on the flip side, so this author, Suzanne Fields, is obviously, I think, in our camp here, the three of us. But there's a quote from an inner-city teacher in Sacramento at a high school, not a college, who wrote in the Washington Post that she does not think she is cheating her students by not teaching Shakespeare. She wrote, "I do not believe that a long-dead British guy is the only writer who can teach my students about the human condition." And it goes on, "So I ask, why not teach the oral tradition out of Africa, which includes an equally relevant commentary on human behavior?" And this picks up just where Roel left off. It doesn't mean that you can't teach that. It's just that you shouldn't stop teaching Shakespeare.
The problem is there is not time to teach everything.
Right.
You know, either Melville stays and Maya Angelou goes, or you've got to make room for Maya Angelou, right?
But the thing is, Shakespeare is not only profound, and he is not only true to character, but he takes you through an arc of experience and language that you can't forget. Going in Hamlet from to be or not to be to that let be at the end, you suddenly realize what has happened to this man. He's gone from revenge to acceptance. It's a tremendous arc. The shift between Macbeth and Lady Macbeth in language that is stunning, that sticks with you, but the two running together, that's what makes it work. Language, insight, the insight of great language and the insight into human character, though that is a combination that is unique in Shakespeare. You find it in others, but no one does it as well as Shakespeare. So there.
I applaud. And so here I am. You know, I'm in still this mode of trying to accept the fact that I'm really not going to be the Shakespeare professor forever. It's sort of slipped into my identity pretty deeply, and I'll have one more shot at it in the fall. But trying to talk about the future of our department at St. Ambrose, we're discussing, well, we have a smaller number of English majors. Are we just a a group that's going to offer composition classes? How is our major going to continue? And I'm pleading for the continuation of teaching Shakespeare. And I said, just as well as you just said a little bit ago, that how can we have a liberal arts education here? And I know St. Ambrose has many different other directions in it, and it's a wonderful combination of the practical and the more traditional style of education, but a liberal arts education. And I think of Shakespeare at the heart of a liberal arts education, at the heart of an English major. And it just makes me almost want to cry to think that maybe that's not what everybody else thinks.
Obviously it isn't. I mean, look at that article you just quoted from.
I admit, building a canon anew may be what's required, but there are certain things that have to be in that canon, and you cannot avoid Shakespeare. Maybe you don't get a whole course on Shakespeare, but you can't leave out Lear and Hamlet. I mean, those are implications of Lear. I mean, good Lord.
It is being done, Don.
Oh, well, then we have truly become savages.
I know. I know. Well, and what can we do? What can we do? It's a big question.
I don't think there will ever be a canon again.
No, but I'll tell you, that's why the Genesis Guild's in the park.
Right.
Because I'm not going to let Shakespeare or the Greeks go away. They're too important. And it's true that your best introduction to them is to see them performed.
Right.
And then you read them. But I don't know how you do that either.
Well, I think, you know, my grandkids are now going or have just finished going through high school, and they are still getting Shakespeare.
Yeah.
But all the rest of the things they used to get, the uniformity of an English education is just disappearing.
But I do have most of my students with a Shakespeare background a little bit. If it's not Midsummer Night's Dream, it's Macbeth. Those are maybe the big two.
Right.
Julius Caesar less.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can see that Julius Caesar may, you know, and there's a complaint in this article that, you know, why Julius Caesar should be accessible to our high school students because of the simplicity of the language, and it doesn't have quite so many metaphors. It doesn't have quite so many images, but it has these sort of essential issues that should be of interest to the teenagers.
And it's not sexy.
Romeo and Juliet. I really am kind of reassured by the students that come into my class. At least this is from Eastern Iowa and across the river. So that we have a lot of Quad City and the region,
right,
in our classrooms. And then the Chicago kids who come in, and they all seem to have some connection with Shakespeare still. And I love it because they'll take the class and they're a little intimidated, just like what I did last year with leading the Shakespeare theme. I just tried to reassure everybody who felt a little bit intimidated that it's fun. It's not that hard.
Right.
You just need coaching. and then to be exposed to a lot of it. So in my Shakespeare class, we start easy, and then you add and you add and you add, and pretty soon you're not worried about the th endings and the these and its language is not necessarily Shakespeare, and you get into it. So by the end of those 3 months, you know you like Shakespeare.
Yeah. Once you get into it, you know, before he left Augie, Jim Winship was suggesting that he and I team teach a course on politics and Shakespeare using the Henry plays and Julius Caesar. Well, there are others that you can use too. But I thought that's a way to teach Shakespeare too, incorporate it into other things, because Shakespeare has great stuff on politics. And we're out of time, doggone it. Well,
already? How did that happen?
I don't know.
We just got started.
It's Roll's fault. Okay. Nancy Hayes, it's been a pleasure to talk to you because we all kind of agree here. And you know, good luck with your final Shakespeare, and good luck in retirement.
Thank you, Don.
Okay. And right now, I know we'll have some good luck with Garrison Keillor. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. I think I've calmed down a bit.
I found a new button to push. Well, I knew Shakespeare was a button.
Oh, yeah. Shakespeare is just, you know, and he can do it in one sentence. I mean, and Hamlet is just full of stuff like this. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And I thought, that's right. We different people have different ideas about different things, and because they think that way, it's right for them.
Well, Emerson said the same thing, Don. I'm an American lit guy. Why don't we keep Emerson in the canon?
I'm all for Emerson in the canon, but the thing is, you don't have to have a substantial amount of time. You need some time with Shakespeare because the plays are long, and trying to pick among them is hard. I used to think, you know, King Lear was a play we didn't want to do because it was too hard and so on, but once we did it, I thought, this is the great play. I thought it was Hamlet, but Lear is cosmic in its scope. It's just overwhelming. But once you deal with a play like that, yeah, you begin to see how important it is, but you could have a poem by Shelley and one by Keats, you know, to do a whole section on him. But I don't know how you put a canon together these days.
You don't. I don't. I think that each teacher who teaches introduction to, you know, the introduction to lit course used to be the required course at Augustana for everyone. And we all picked the same novel, often Return of the Native by Thomas Hardy. We all picked the same three plays, Macbeth and often Julius Caesar, and we picked the same short stories so that every student, whether they came to Section 1 or 17 or Section 24, they would cover the same material, have the same exam, and gradually that faded because this teacher didn't particularly like this person and this teacher didn't like this person. So by the time I left teaching, I taught an introduction to lit course that was totally unrecognizable to even colleagues that I got along with very well.
Yeah.
Because we each, and there's something to be said for that. Teach your passion, right? I taught those things I loved.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to teach those things that I didn't particularly care for anymore.
Well, what do we
understand.
Have in common as a people? We are so diverse a nation. We need something to hang on to together.
Well, it's no longer literature.
No, that's true. But a lot of commonalities are gone. We used to have only three TV networks. Everybody saw the same thing.
It is
now you pick and choose.
It is no longer even writing anymore. Remember, well, I'm sure when you started your television work, you were required to use a Midwestern dialect.
Yeah, well, I'm
don't
required.
Have to do that.
We're required to leave now. See you next week.
All
on
right.
Scribble.